floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, amigos. It's time for another episode of Walking the Floor with me, your host, Chris Shiflett. And let me remind you that we are, as always, brought to you today by Floyd's 99 Barbershops. Floyd's, where America gets its haircut. All right. I am in Krakow, Poland today. I've never been to Krakow, Poland, and I think this place might be the most beautiful city in all of Europe. No offense to the rest of Europe, and it's all been really fun. We had a couple great shows in Germany, great show in Amsterdam, great show down in Chisina. And I actually don't know how the show's going to be here today because we haven't played it yet, but I have been walking around in the rain all day in the old square, at the old castle, in the old Jewish part of town, eating my body weight in pork and buying trinkets and just really taking it all in. I can't believe we've never been here before, and I hope we come back again really soon. It's amazing. This is actually my favorite time of the year to be over here touring Europe. I love fall when it's heading into winter and everything's getting cold and there's weather and it gets dark at like 4 p.m. and it just feels like you're in like a Christmas fairy tale or something. All the Christmas decorations are out and you get to like wear scarves and put your big coat on and go walk around. It's great. And I always drink like way too much coffee and, you know, just soak it all up. It's the best. That's the one drawback to living in Southern California is that you never get to wear clothes like scarves and jackets and pants and stuff like that, which is why I pretty much dress like I'm 7 years old and I'm 44. Anyway, what are we doing today? We're talking to Mr. Dickie Barrett from the mighty, mighty Bosstones. Now, let's rewind a little bit back to Boston this past summer. You may recall, Foos had the pleasure of playing Fenway 2 nights in a row. And the first night, we played with Mighty Mighty Bosstones. And my man Dickie was kind enough, even though it was a hometown show, and he was actually doing 2 gigs that night, and I'm sure he had, you know, a million friends and family and lots of things to deal with, but he agreed to come out and talk to me out at the Floyd's Barber Bus parked out in front of the gig. This was actually the first time I ever did an interview. This is the only interview I've ever done in front of a crowd. And it was really, really fun. And we were, you know, getting heckled and having a good time. And, you know, I go way back with Dickie because the first tour I ever went on, and we talk about this in the interview, but the first tour I ever went on was as a roadie for this band called Wax that went out with them in, like, February of 1995 or something like that. So here we are outside of the historic home of the Red Sox talking about, you know, his childhood and discovering punk rock and his years in the Boston hardcore scene through, you know, the formation of the Mighty Mighty Bosstones all the way up to his current gig as announcer for the Jimmy Kimmel Show. Check it out. Dickie Barrett from the Mighty Mighty Bosstones on Walking the Floor.
When I met you, you had the greatest hat any man. And you were a young boy. You were a kid.
That's true.
That hat was unbelievable.
That was a good hat.
Didn't you love that hat?
I loved that hat, but I think people at the time...
It's even cooler now.
It's cooler. It got cooler later, but at the time, I think people looked at it and thought, like, Culture Club. I don't think they were thinking Paul Simonon.
No.
You might have been thinking Paul Simonon.
I knew what you were doing.
Okay, good.
I knew exactly what you were
course.
Doing. Just flip the switch at any time.
You
we're
know,
rolling.
I was supposed to mention we're not supposed to swear. Because this is Boston, and we don't want anybody getting offended.
People don't swear here.
In Boston, oh, come on, you guys. Jesus.
In Boston, they're not called swears. It's just,
it's just talking.
Just regular, normal language.
Hey,
adjectives.
I should mention before we get going here that Floyd's is going to be doing haircuts here after we're done, and all the money raised from the haircuts goes to Music Cares, which is a charity that's probably going to be helping Dickie and I out in a few years when we're down on our luck.
4 or 5 years for me.
Yeah.
10 or 11 for Chris.
So, Boston, how are you?
Hey, everybody.
You know, this is the first time I've ever done one of my Walking the Floor interviews in front of a live audience, so
You know, just bear with us while we're trying to work through this.
Right.
And this man right here doesn't need any introduction in Boston, does he? Give it up for the singer for the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, Mr. Dickie
Barrett.
Hey,
everybody.
Look, Higgs is right there. Higgs
it's
just rolled up.
It's good to be back. What's up, homie?
Just to make us uncomfortable. He's over there eyeballing us.
Yeah.
How's it going, buddy? Thank you for taking time to do this.
No problem at all. I would do anything for you, Chris.
Really?
No, well, I mean, within
reason. I might hold
reason.
You to that later after
within
the show.
Within reason. Those of you who don't know, I met Chris years ago. He was a roadie for a band called Wax that we took on tour for the Kinder Words. Question the Answers album
yes.
tour. And Chris was a young kid, and he was a roadie for that band. And we became very good friends and have been friends ever since.
You know, that's true. And when I was actually thinking about that before
right.
I came over here today. And on that tour, so Wax was the first of three on a Boss Tones tour, which means they were the very first band. And I was one of two crew guys, and I was the bottom of the ladder in terms of the Wax crew. I was literally the last guy on the tour. I was like the bottom of the
but
totem
you
pole.
You were number one in my heart, Chris.
Well, I'm making a point here. I'm making a point about you and your band and how great you guys were and are to bands that go on tour and what role models you guys were for me. This is something I took with me forever because on the first day of the first tour, like we drove all the way from California to start the tour in Buffalo, and I got there and it was like snowing, and you know, I'm born and raised in California. I was completely out of my element, and I walked in, I was super intimidated, and the Boss Tones were all these big guys. There's like eight of them, and then like a million crew guys, and everybody's tattooed with like Red Sox caps on. I was totally scared. And right away, first thing, they just said, come into our dressing room, drink all the beer, eat all the food, make yourselves at home. Don't ask us for anything ever. Our space is your space.
Well, we're cut from the same cloth as a guy like your current frontman, Dave
yes,
Grohl.
True.
Who comes from the DC hardcore scene, which is all-inclusive. Nobody's better than anybody else. One for all. We're all on the road doing the same thing, trying to deliver a good show.
True that.
From the moment we stepped foot in Fenway Park this afternoon, the Foo Fighters crew and team and everybody has said, you know, the only thing we don't want you to do is fall off the stage. And I said, I'm not making that up. They said, you can have anything you want. You can have, you know, help yourself to anything. Just don't hurt yourselves. And they've been, the hospitality and the treatment has been unparalleled.
Oh, that's good to hear.
And so, you know, it's what comes around goes around, Chris.
Dave's been known to invite bands we play with in to do some shots, so I might see you in our room there later. We'll see. Do you like being home? Do you like playing shows at home? Like, is that hard for you?
Everything else I enjoy. I love playing Boston.
Really?
We do three shows on the next street over every year, the Hometown Throwdown. Chris, the reception we get, it's the holiday time, and the joy that we get from the people that come and see us. I love playing Boston, and Boston treats us tremendously.
So you don't like without having all your family and friends? Because for me, I get super, like, I just had my family
oh,
out for the whole show.
No, my family's the worst.
Because you know they're looking at you going like, oh, what's he doing up there?
Yeah.
He's acting.
Well, they were even worse with this Foo Fighters show. Because cousins that have never seen the Boss Tones are calling me up, and I'm like, who? Cousin who? It's cousin Tommy. Tommy, I haven't seen you in 15 years. Well, I want to see you play Fenway Park. Well, we're going to be playing T.T. the Bears after. Is that good? Nah.
Tommy, yeah, I know. I got a lot more popular in my family after I got this gig, too.
We want to come see you play, and what time do the Foo Fighters go on? I don't want to...
You know what's something weird? My brother Scott,
I know Scott
plays
yeah.
bass for Face to Face.
Yes.
He's actually in town recording right now.
Scott is here?
In town recording. He's not coming to the show. Says he's too busy.
Well, I don't know if that hurts your feelings, but that hurts my feelings.
I know,
as well.
Seriously.
Does he know the Boss Tones are playing?
I told him.
Maybe we could change his tune. Oh, this bastard.
Steven
I know.
Tyler.
What happened? What are you gonna
I'm
just
not related out? To Steven Tyler, my friend.
Just yell out anything that comes into your head, sir. One time, oh my God, I know this guy. One time, you know.
I know you too.
How you been?
So So you just mentioned you guys are playing TT the Bears tonight.
Yes, after
the
show.
Gig.
Yeah.
Is that a place?
Am I jumping ahead on your notes?
Well, a little bit, but that's okay. No, that's actually kind of right where it was.
Oh, good.
Did you cheat and look at these? No.
Let me see.
I got some surprises.
Here it says, "Big dude yells out anything that enters his head."
TT the Bears, right there. TT the Bears.
TT the Bears. Yes.
No. So does that? I know that place is closing down pretty soon, right?
This is the last week of the club. That's. I think it's. How many years? 40 something.
Really?
No, maybe less than that.
But do you guys in particular have like a
I want to say less than that because I was there the day it opened. So I want to say 40.
So yeah, it was like 15 years. 15 years tops.
I think it was 25 years.
Oh, wow. And did you guys play there a lot when you were first starting out?
When they first started, I remember the day the doors opened at TT the Bears and I burst through them and said, "You're going to be seeing a lot of me. Now set up the beer."
And something tells me that they'll have the beer set up for you.
Yes, they will.
You know, let's back up a little bit. Like, what got you into music when you were like a little kid? Like, what was like your friends, your family? What made you a music fan? And what was it that you were listening to at that time?
It started with AM radio, and I still love 70s AM
like
radio.
Like Nick Gilder and stuff like that?
All that stuff, all the Glenn Campbell, all the different AM hits, The Night Chicago Died, all that AM stuff.
Yep.
And my father would crank it in his car when we'd drive back and forth to Boston. I grew up in Norwood, a town called Norwood. Nobody?
Yeah, baby!
You're all alone, honey. It's a couple guys from Dedham eyeballing you. So I grew up in Norwood and AM radio, 70s AM radio, and then that turned to rock and roll, and my parents got me a Beatles album and then an Aerosmith album followed by that. Shortly followed, Toys in the Attic, and then I fell in love with that. And then a kid moved from Roslindale to Norwood with a trunk full of punk rock records. And he had them all, and we just couldn't believe it. And me and my friends just became instant punk rockers.
Was that like the English stuff or the U.S. stuff? Or
it was all the English. It was Sex Pistols and anything that comes into your head, sir, just yell it out. The Buzzcocks too, yeah. I love this guy. You only get him here though.
That's my sidekick right there. That's my Ed McMahon.
Oh, it's part of the show. I didn't know that, Chris. So then I fell in love with punk rock, and then when I heard punk rock, I said, well, you know, when I heard Aerosmith, I said, there's no way I can do that. But when I heard punk rock, I said, you know what, I might be able to do that. And I started a band in high school called Impact Unit. It was a hardcore punk band.
That was your first band, Impact Unit?
Yes. Followed by a ska punk band called the Cheapskates, followed by the Mighty Mighty Bosstones.
But like before you started playing in a band, were you like an extrovert kid that would like jump on the table at the party and sing Black Sabbath songs or whatever it was?
I was the extrovert kid, yeah, for sure. But also I was an oddball and strange. And I was all the things.
What made you, I guess we kind of covered it with punk rock was your entry point. But were there local bands around town that made you think like, hey, I could do that too. Like, I could get up on stage.
For sure. Well, me and my friend Mark Higgins were...
Mark Higgins.
Yes.
Right over there, big man.
Who was also on that tour.
Yes, he was. The first guy I met on that tour, actually. And maybe the most scariest, you know, if you don't know him.
Born and raised in Dorchester, Massachusetts. Big hand for Dorchester. Dorchester's proudest son. And so Mark Higgins moved to Norwood when he was a freshman in high school, and I had just been thrown out of Severian Brothers High School. And everybody knows all these. Sorry, Chris, this is all going over your head. So I'd been thrown out of Severian, and it was back to the Norwood school system, and we're both in the guidance counselor's office. He was coming in from Dorchester, and I was, as I said, restarting my Norwood public school system education. And so we met and we became close friends. Now we're listening to college radio, and on poor signal coming out of Boston College, I think, and all of a sudden it said there's going to be a show, a hardcore punk, we're starting a scene. And we're going, starting a scene? How do you start a scene? So anybody, if you're from the suburbs, no matter where you're from, come into Boston, Gallery East, come see SSD Control. And we're like, we're there. We're going to be part of the scene. And I say this, you know, because we were young, impressionable gut kids looking for something to be a part of. And it was, you know, thank God we didn't get there and it was the American Nazi Party or something. But I was like, all right, but we're a part of this hardcore, Boston hardcore, and maybe 100 people were involved in it with bands like FU's, SSD Control, the Jerry's Kids, Gangrene, and that's what with the Freeze from Cape Cod. And we were part of that. We'd go to all the shows. That is the most annoying noise I've ever...
Where is that music coming from? Is that coming from inside the venue? Can they shut up in there? Jesus. Or is it coming from outside the venue? It's coming from right there.
Would somebody from Charlestown shoot that with their gun?
Take out that speaker. Come on, Boston.
You see the power I have in this town?
That is amazing.
I told you, Chris.
I knew you were connected around here, but I didn't know it worked like that. Jesus. So how'd the Bosstones get together? I mean, Bosstones are kind of a mix of a bunch of different sounds. It's like punk rock and ska and metal and all that stuff. Like
when the Cheapskates broke up, there was a handful of Cambridge kids that were a couple years younger than me. Joe Gittleman, Nate Albert, Ben Carr, they had a band going, and they realized I wasn't in a band, and they said, you know, we've got this band, would you like to sing for this? And I said, sure. And a love affair started that day. We were friends ever since. And like I said, but we were influenced by so many different types of music.
Like, can you tie all the different influences to individual members of the band, or was it
no,
just something
cause
you guys
we
all
shared it
to?
Yeah, right. Like when it came to Metallica, we all agreed. When it came to Madness, we all agreed. When it came to the Specials, we all, you know, pray at the altar of Joe Strummer and the Clash, whether it was Blondie or, you know, even dumber, you know, 80s bands, then sure. We loved them all.
And when you guys first started touring and playing around, like, you know, not just playing around town here, but actually getting in a van and traveling around, I was always baffled. How did you fit in an Econo line?
Yes.
I mean, there's like 8 of you with horns and luggage and amps and suits and all that stuff. Like, how did you do that?
We used to roll with 12.
In a van?
Yes. It was a blue, baby blue Econoline van, so it was three, two, and then one guy, the road manager, had to sleep with his legs going down underneath the benches and his head between the driver and the passenger.
I've been that guy.
I could tell you something. He was forced there. He was very low on the totem pole, and he wasn't allowed to look at me.
He wasn't allowed to look at you.
And I was shotgun.
Like while he was sleeping or just all the time?
All the time.
That doesn't sound like a Bosstones rule.
I would wake him up if he was looking at me.
He'd say, I
didn't even know it. I was sleeping. I go, that's not my problem.
Was that like...
Miles and miles and miles. You had to come up with something to entertain yourself.
Well, I heard that back then to stay awake, you guys were known to maybe take a little acid to stay awake on those big long drives.
There was a drive, and kids block your ears. From Chicago to... No, it was from Lawrence, Kansas to Chicago.
That's a long drive.
That never should have happened. And it was accidental, and the college kids in Lawrence, Kansas, can we blame them? Let's blame them. So we left in our suits, and there was one guy in the van who wasn't under the influence, and he woke up. At some point, we went through a time zone change, and we were trying to change the time on the radio. And he woke up and he goes, guys, what are you doing? And we said, well, Nate, we're so high right now, we no longer know how to work the radio. And he goes, oh, Jesus. And went back to sleep.
Was there ever a time, like a specific moment when the Bosstones were first starting out that you thought, like, we could, like, do this for real? Like, we could do this professionally?
I still don't think it.
Seriously.
That time has not come. I don't think any of it's been real. I don't think it's ever going to get real. It's all been this kind of crazy dream that just to be able to travel around, to be able to make music, to be able to, you know, play Fenway Park as a kid growing up in Norwood and Boston and all the neighborhoods. I lived two blocks that way on Queensbury Street for the longest time when I was a kid, and it was dangerous to live there. This is all a dream. So no, I never thought I could make a dime, and no, I can't believe I have, and I can't believe it's been.
We've both been touring for a long time. I'm wondering, how has touring changed for you over the years? Like, I know when I was younger, I would just try to sleep till lobby call, and it kind of didn't matter where I was at, and then I would go to the club and sit around, wait till the show started. Now I'm, like, out and about, and I'm trying to, like, stay productive and stay in touch with what's happening at home and stuff.
See, that's where we're different, Chris. All I want to do is waste time.
Really?
I got a 3.5-year-old daughter.
When you were younger, you were out and about, and now you're just wasting time.
When I'm home, it's all about my daughter as a 3.5-year-old child. When I'm on the road, I want to sleep. The shows get in the way because I just want to waste time.
Isn't that amazing how it flips from, because I have kids too.
Yeah.
Home life is so much crazier than being on the road now.
Yeah, but we can't put this out there. If our wives find out, we're, you know, because all the phone calls go like, oh, it's grueling out here, baby. It is tough.
Oh, yeah.
I only want to be home, doll.
Yeah, you can never. We were in Australia recently, and I was like telling my wife, hey, I'm going to go surf this island off the coast of Perth or whatever. She's just like, you know what? Don't
if
tell
anybody
me that.
Tells my wife to listen to the Floyd the Barber podcast with
Walking the Floor. Walking the Floor.
Don't.
Please. Let's get the name straight.
What is it called? It's what do you call this, Chris?
This is a testament to what a good friend this guy is. Dude, he comes out, doesn't
tell
even know
what
he's doing.
Tell me what the
it's
name
called Walking the Floor.
Walking the Floor?
Walking the Floor with Chris Shiflett.
Why don't they write it up there?
That's a good question. We've got it right there. Look at that. Look at that.
Walking the Floor.
Look at that. That's me in the cowboy hat and the shades. That's a good hat.
That's a nice little poster.
That is a nice poster. I'm going to be signing some of those after we get done with our little talk here. Speaking of which, where is Megan? How are we doing on time? We're good? Okay, good, good, good. Good, good.
He wants me out of here. I didn't know.
No. Well,
walk in the floor, all right? Everybody help yourselves to these.
That's right. Afterwards, we're going to be doing a little signing down right down there. I know. I had a question for you. How long were the Boston's a band before people started showing up in, like, flannel outfits?
It seemed to happen pretty quick.
Because that's like a different kind of fan. That's like a Kiss fan or something. That's like a really hardcore fan.
With the plaid coats and the bow ties and the short pants, that seemed to happen right out of the gate. People started to, you know, as long as they look stupid, why don't we look stupid too?
And does that still happen? Is it like the same guy showing up like 20 years later and he's got it's a little threadbare and he's still going?
Yes, there are. Are there any Boston's fans out there?
How did the gig on Kimmel come about? Like, how did that happen?
That came
because that was like right after you guys kind of went on hiatus, wasn't it? Just right after that.
It kind of coincided because we'd been touring quite a bit. We'd been like doing 20 years and 300 shows a year. We're tour animals for a long time, and I turned 40 and said, you know, I don't know if I can do anything else, and I wanted to find out, and so I tried seeing if I could get a job at a record company or something like that, and. At that time, the record industry was
tanking,
so I picked a bad time for that. But Jimmy, who was a longtime radio guy, was on K-Rock and a lot of other different markets, and I had met him because of touring and doing radio, and he heard I was looking to do something else, and he said, why don't you come try to be the announcer on the show? And I said, that sounds like fun. Didn't imagine it would last, or I didn't think I'd like doing it. But I love it. I love Jimmy Kimmel. I love the people that work there. I like being there, and it's a nice, real nice thing to do.
At what point did you guys decide to put the Boston's hiatus on hiatus and start working again?
Like, well, what made you? I think you miss all it? Wanted to take a break from it.
Like, what know? Do you do? Like, when in that time off, with like when you have song ideas and stuff, were you just woodshedding?
Get fat and meet each miss each other. You realize if you don't sweat every day for 2 hours that you can really put on the weight.
Right, but for real, like, is that like a boiling point where you're like, I have to get out and do some shows. Like, now's the time. Let's go.
It started really with missing each other.
Right. Because like, you guys are kind of all over the place now.
Yeah, but now we're not. Now we're together a bunch of times a year. And but it started when we wanted to get back together was like, we've got to just see each other. Because that was something that was completely missing from my life was not being around Joe Gittleman, who is my best friend in the world.
Sure.
Yeah, so we started just getting together and hanging out, and then he started saying, you know, do you think we could do maybe a throwdown? And I said, I don't know. Does anybody give a shit?
How long had it been since the last throwdown?
Bill, how long was the hiatus?
4 years.
4 years, he says. 4 years, and so it had been 4 years.
And have you guys been doing them every year since then, since you started doing them again?
Yes.
Nice. And how was the tour coming out here?
What's the next throwdown? What's the number? 18th throwdown.
Wow.
And then you gotta add the 4 years.
Right. Well, how does that work? Like, what clubs are they at here?
It started, the first throwdown was a summer thing at the Middle East Club downstairs for 5 days.
Is that still here? Does the Middle East still exist?
Yes, right around the corner from TT the Bears over in Cambridge. Oh my God, I'm playing TT the Bears tonight. We got to wrap this up, Chris. I got a long night.
It's going to be a...
Are you coming over?
I am definitely coming over. When? What time are you guys playing TT the Bears?
These questions are getting tough.
We got a 10:30 curfew, I think, here.
Oh, really?
That hopefully we won't break, so I want to make sure I don't miss your guys' set over there.
Well, we got to wrap this up, then.
Let's wrap this up, and let's let this man get in there and do his set and get to TT the Bears.
Everybody get in there and see Mission of Burma.
Exactly.
Do yourselves a favor. The legendary Mission of Burma.
Please thank my good friend, Mr. Dickie Barrett of the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones,
Chris,
for taking time out of his day to come over here.
I love you too. Thank you, buddy.
Let's make love soon.
So we went right from that to Dickie getting his hair did and then running up on stage and killing it at Fenway with the Boss Tones. If you want to see what the Boss Tones are up to, check out BossTonesMusic.com for all your updates and see what's happening in their world. Or you can just watch Dickie on Jimmy Kimmel every night of the week. Either way. And don't forget, if you're bored, go check out walkinthefloor.com. You can listen to all the old interviews that are all up there or get us in the iTunes store. And that is that for this week. I'll be back soon. 2 weeks. And I haven't looked at my schedule, so I forget who the next interview is. But I'm sure it's good. Anywho, adios, amigos!